Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Global Change Agents with me, Leanna Brinded, the Digest Edition, a podcast brought to you by Yahoo Finance UK. You can watch a full version of this interview by heading over to yahoo.co.uk/changeagents.
Joining me today is Esther Wojcicki, a journalist and award-winning educator who has been dubbed the godmother of Silicon Valley. The mother of YouTube CEO Susan, 23andMe founder Anne, and anthropologist Janet, Esther is one of the foremost experts in preparing children and adults to succeed. So Esther, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, it's fantastic you joining us here all the way in London, back from Silicon Valley.
Yes.
And so tell me a bit about your childhood and, of course, how that shaped you later on.
I grew up in a sort of an impoverished environment because my parents were immigrants to the United States from Russia. And so my father was an artist. And as a result, you know, artists don't earn a lot of money. And so we didn't have a lot of money. And unfortunately, you know, he went from the East to the West. Go west, young man, see if you can find your outcome, your life. And it didn't work out quite the way he planned it to work out. And so I had a somewhat difficult childhood. There was a tragedy that happened when I was about 10 years old. And I had a third brother, a second brother named David. And he was in the kitchen playing with a bottle of aspirin on the floor. And it was prior to the days when they had child safety caps. So he opened this bottle and then he ate it. And you would think it'd be terrible, but he ate it. And then my mother, not knowing what to do, being an immigrant, called the doctor and said, well, what should I do? You know, my child just did this. And she said, the doctor said, put him to bed and see how he is in a few hours. Well, any sort of thinking person would know that that's not the right thing to do. But my mother just believed what he said. And so she put him to bed. In a few hours, he was really violently ill. And as a result, we took him to a hospital. It was a local community hospital where they pumped his stomach. But they wouldn't keep him. But he was still really ill. So we went from hospital to hospital. In the U.S., you know, you don't get free medical care. And so he wasn't accepted in any of the other hospitals because we didn't have proof of payment. So by the fourth hospital, they finally accepted him, but then it was unfortunately too late and he died. So this impacted my life as a child. I didn't realize it as a child, what was really going to be happening. I just realized what a tragedy had happened. But what the long-term result of that is that I didn't believe anybody in authority. Whenever an authority figure told me something, I just always felt I had to check it out. I had to make sure that they were right. And it was kind of a life or death issue, you know. And like I said, it wasn't conscious. It was an unconscious thing. And so that impacted the way that I brought up my children and the way that I taught as a teacher, because I was always wanting them to be able to think and being able to question authority and being well able to be independent. And I think if I think back on it, that is one of the reasons why I question the whole education system. It's like, is it really doing what it should be doing for students? You know, is parenting really doing what it should be doing for parenting? Are we bringing up a generation of kids that are dependent on their parents? Or are we bringing up a generation of kids that can think independently and feel good about themselves? So that's my background. And I was lucky to get a full scholarship to University of California, Berkeley. I applied to one school, and I went. Fortunately, got into that one school. And I got a graduate degree in journalism. And the reason that I did that was because I really, again, wanted to protect the underdog. That was my goal. It's like, I want to write your story. I want to make sure that everybody hears the story about what you want to say, but you maybe don't have the tools to do it.
So whether you were questioning authority consciously or unconsciously, especially when you were still a child yourself and going through school, how did you forge your own path and how did you actually establish those grounds to explore or question things when you're taught at a very early age that you always listen to your parents, no matter what they say, and you always follow whatever the teachers instruct you to do?
Well, I was just a rebel, a maverick. And I did not always follow what they said I should do. So that got me into trouble sometimes. And I think that, you know, kids that don't follow the beaten path, you know, parents get upset about that. But those are the ones that are the free thinkers. Those are the ones that might be making change for society. So, you know, I don't think parents should get upset when their child is not following the path and doing, you know, 100% on their tests and things like that. We want people that think independently and that are able to, you know, solve the problems we have here on this planet. So some of the other things that I did, you know, in high school, I went to a school where it was so crowded that they had to have two different sessions for the students. So the first group went from 7 to 11:30 and the second group went from 12 to 4. And that's because they didn't have enough facilities. And so I think I might have been the only student in the school that requested permission to go to both sessions. Nobody else ever, I don't think. I had no competition because they said yes right away. And the advantage to me is that I got to take twice as much stuff. And I got to learn more. This I didn't realize that I was trying to protect myself. I just realized I wanted to know as much as I could about the world so that I could be independent and protect myself and protect whoever was around me. And, you know, like I said, being in journalism, you know, journalists have front row seat on life. You ask all the questions. You're there when things are happening. And that's part of the reason why I think journalism is a curriculum for all students. All students need to have this kind of a skill. They shouldn't be afraid to ask a question and then get that information and then decide for themselves whether that information is valid and be able to write about it. This is one of the reasons why I teach journalism and why I think these skills are skills for all students for the 21st century, because we're all journalists. Everybody's producing stuff on their phones today, everywhere. And we have this opportunity, and so we should have the ethics and the skills and the know-how how to do it in a way that matters for all of us, so that we're not promoting things that are fake.
The Wojcicki HQ, you would say, is in Silicon Valley, and there's very much of the DNA of, you know, innovation. It's tech orientated, and obviously, even when it comes to the Palo Alto High School with all the journalism program, that's very innovative too. But for all other parts of the world where it's not as concentrated with that kind of DNA, how would you say about when we talk about creativity that tech needs to be part of that? I suppose in the wider space and in other industries, especially across businesses and those looking into early child development programs, there's been a lot of fear around screen time, how that affects children. And of course, there seems to be this kind of notion that technology is bad for kids. Do you think there needs to be, I suppose, an education on an adult level on how to integrate technology into the development of children?
Well, I think that's number one concern for most parents today is how to use technology in a way that's intelligent with their kids. And so they're afraid that their kids are using too much technology and that they don't know what the outcome is. Well, I'm worried too. And so my recommendation is very limited technology up until age 5. As a matter of fact, no technology before the age of 2. And then after that, it could be maybe an hour a day. And during that time, you can set up the pattern already with the kids, saying, here's a choice. Here are a few things that you might want to do. And so you pick one and I'll pick one. So you're setting up this pattern of collaboration with your child early on, even before the age of 5. And then after 5, of course, they get even smarter, right? And so how do you pick what they are going to be watching? Because some kids just want to play games all the time. And so you need to explain that 1 hour they pick, 1 hour you pick. And, you know, as they get, I think, older, maybe it can be a little bit more time. But it's important for them to realize that it's a collaboration. And that's why it starts early in childhood. And in high school, maybe a lot of their stuff is going to be online learning. So Khan Academy, for example, or other things that where they want to learn. You know, Google has an Google Explorations 3D, and you buy this little cardboard thing for $5, and then kids can travel around the world. So there's a lot of great stuff. So I don't want to limit it. I just want to curate it so that we can make it a really great experience for the child and take advantage of this tech world that we all live in.
So when it comes to parenting, one of the things that really stood out, especially in the foreword when your daughters wrote, was the amount of fun and silliness. Part of what was coming out is that having that kind of aspect of fun throughout their whole childhood from an authority figure, from parents like yourself, made a huge difference. Do you find that fun and silliness is all part and parcel of being successful?
Yes, I do think fun and silliness is part of being successful, because it's a sense of humor. You know, everything in life, there's a lot of things that don't go right, and you can either cry about them or you can laugh about them, or perhaps you can do a combination of both. So I do tend to be pretty silly most of the time, it's been fun. I have a great time doing it. And my daughters wrote about this in the introduction. I guess they just saw me. You know, I had been at Target, which is one of my favorite stores in the U.S., and they had a hot dog costume there. I could not resist. I am not kidding. So I put it on. I dressed up like a hot dog. This was just in time for Halloween, right? And then I took a picture of myself, or had somebody do that, and then posted it on Facebook. Why not, you know? But that is the kind of thing that I think it's fun to do things like that. And in class, I do a lot of fun things all the time. I mean, the students never know what to expect. But then that engenders fun on their behalf. You know, they do things that are fun too. So when you're in a fun environment, you think of fun things to do as well. And so why not make it fun? You know, I just flew here last night. You know, I arrived at 1:30. And so I did everything I could to make this morning fun. And it has been fun. I took my picture with a very large blue gorilla. And
I'm at Gatwick?
No, it was another place but I saw this large blue fuzzy, was not alive, right? It was a statue. But I think life can be fun if you don't take it so seriously. It's important, remember, to be an optimist. I mean, the alternative is worse.
And you've achieved so much in your life and career, but what would you say has been the proudest moment for you?
Well, the proudest moments, I think, for me are my daughters and their achievements. And, you know, when I gave birth to all of them, you know, it was exciting for me to have daughters and be a mother. I had a great time being a mother. But I never expected them to rise to the positions they have today in the world. And I'm very proud of what they've done. And I'm very proud of Susan and what she's doing with YouTube. And it's a very difficult path to follow, but she's blazing a path in the 21st century. Nobody else has done it. And then Janet is doing the same thing in pediatrics and diet and medicine and how do we keep our children healthy? And then Anne with 23andMe, you know, understanding your genetics and how that impacts you, and can you make a difference in your life by understanding your DNA? Turns out, yes, you can, and it's an important thing. So I'm really proud of them for, you know, being on these paths that they pick themselves, and they're trying to make the world a better place. And, I mean, that's what we should all be doing. So I'm thrilled to have amazing daughters and amazing students. And thank you for inviting me here and letting me talk about it.
Well, thank you very much for coming. It's been an incredibly inspirational interview, so thank you very much.
Oh, the pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Global Change Agents with me, Leanna Brinded, produced by Yahoo Finance UK. A full version of this interview can be found at yahoo.co.uk/changeagents. And for more information, go to uk.finance.yahoo.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.